Welcome to the Scare Trap Podcast, the UK's first podcast dedicated to the scare attraction and haunted house industry. However, please be advised that we have no censor. The language used may be of an explicit nature and is not intended for younger listeners or the easily offended. All views expressed are those of the individual host and do not necessarily reflect those of ScareTrack, our guests, or any of our associates. So, if you're still here, let's get scared.
So this is where our adventure begins.
Oh my god!
I scared myself!
Kate Monroe is screaming. Spoiler alert, freaking awesome.
That's the loudest I've heard. Very long time.
Quality of the set was amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't like it.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the Scare Track Podcast. My name is Mikey and today's episode is an interview episode with Joe Gray, co-owner of the award-winning Dr. Fright's Halloween Nights, based in Northampton right here in the UK. They most recently won a SCAR award last week for Best Maze of 2019 for Killer Clowns in a Spaceship, and that adds to their other awards they've had in previous years as well, including Best Concept and Design, Best Screen Park as well. Dr. Frights, it really is a very different event to anything else we have here in the UK, and myself and Hannah and the whole ScareTrack team really enjoy going. In fact, go back a few episodes ago, go back to October, listen to our on-location review episode from Dr. Fright's Halloween Nights, and you can hear the screams I had in all their attractions. Really fantastic event. We've been wanting to get Joe on the show for a little while now, so whilst we're all in lockdown, we're all in quarantine, we thought perfect opportunity to get him onto the Scare Trap Podcast. If you're a new listener, thank you so, so much. Be sure to, you click that subscribe button and join us over on our social media. We are on Instagram, Snapchat, Twitter and Facebook. Just search for Scare Track. It's always awesome to get a like, a comment, a share, absolutely anything you can do to support the Scare Track Podcast. We've got loads of episodes with nearly 200 episodes in the bank of Scare Track and our sister podcast Coaster Track, all about theme parks. So be sure to subscribe and join us over on our website where you can get absolutely everything Scare Track and Coaster Track related. It's www.scaretrack.co.uk. We have all our podcasts, our YouTube videos, our merchandise store, our Patreon, and so much more over on scaretrack.co.uk. So I think it's time to bring you to the feature section of this episode. It's myself interviewing Joe Gray, co-owner of Dr. Fright's Halloween Nights.
You're listening to Scare Trap.
Hi guys, and welcome back to this episode of the Scare Trap Podcast. Like I said in the intro, I am here with Joe Gray, the co-owner of Dr. Fright's Halloween Night. Joe, welcome to Scare Track.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you on. We always love visiting Dr. Fright's. And before we get started, we need to give a huge congratulations because you recently won a SCAR award.
Yes, we did. Thank you very much. I mean, how cool is that? The Best Maze Award. That's unbelievable. It still hasn't really sunk in yet, to be honest.
Yeah, I suppose this year is that little bit different, wasn't it, without a ceremony as such. But to win, you know, Best Scare Maze of 2019 with Killer Clowns on a Spaceship, it's that's the top prize.
It is, yeah. Yeah, and we're over the moon of it. Like I said, it still hasn't really sunk in. I'm still going back, actually, to look at the on the ScareCon website, look at the nominations, look at the other mazes that we was up against. Mm. Fantastic mazes, from what
Absolutely.
I've heard. And for us to win it, I mean, that's really humbling. That's amazing.
Definitely. And it's not your first award either, is it? You got Best Screen Park a few years ago?
We got Best Screen Park a few years ago. Yeah, I think that was like 5 years ago. And then since then, we've picked up two design and concept awards. One for when we did Cinemassacre for the mm-hmm. theme of that.
Yeah.
And another one last year, which was for What the Hell.
What the Hell, yes, quality.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I mean, we cherish every single one of those awards. I just love, I've got them in my office on my shelf, and I love just to look at them. You know, it's a really good achievement to be able to do that when there's such good competition around, you know. Everybody puts so much effort in.
Yeah, I mean, the UK is, it really is a big, we're not far behind America. America is vast, it's huge, it's humongous, but the talent here in the UK really is top notch.
So to
get those awards as well, especially Killer Clowns on a Spaceship, man, oh, I loved it. I mean, me and Hannah come to Dr. Frights every year, we always have a blast. And that's what I wanted to get you on the show, really. Obviously, we've done a lot of on location visits and episodes with you guys. We managed to speak to you a number of times if we've managed to get away from that heavy rock music, which we love every year. Before we get into it and talk all about yourself and Dr. Frights, everyone listening, yes, we know there's that big elephant in the room of coronavirus and what's going to happen this year and whatnot, but let's touch on that just at the end, and let's try and keep this whole episode a little bit more positive here on ScareTrack, because, you know, there's, you guys, you've done 10 years of Dr. Frights now. So, yep. I mean, where did it all start? How did it start in 2010?
In 2010, do you want to go right back to the beginning?
Why not? Hey, why not?
Well, I was a little horror nerd with a bowl haircut when I was young. And I mean, I can't explain that. You're probably the same. What draws us to this, to this genre?
I don't know, to be fair. Films, yeah, it's hard,
of
isn't it?
Characters. Because when I was young, I would always be interested in it. And I couldn't explain why. When we'd play Lego and stuff like that, instead of building the usual stuff, we'd build ghost trains, haunted houses.
Nice.
And I don't know why I was drew to that sort of thing, you know. So I've always had an interest in it, always, horror films especially. And another thing about my childhood is that I grew up on fun fairs, on traveling fun fairs. That's what my family did, and I've done that for generations. And when I was about 14, we had a haunted house, a traveling haunted house that you'd walk through. We've had two over the time, and that's where I really cut my teeth into the scare attraction sort of industry. It wasn't much of an industry back then, but
of course,
I learned a lot from just that traveling fun fair haunted house. I mean, you know how they are. There's not a lot inside them, and sometimes they're really, really cheesy. But I did have a bit of passion with mine, and I made sure that it did deliver the promise of the outside.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's it. They look amazing from the front, and then you pay your ticket to go in, and then you go in and go, oh, okay. Well, there's a mirror. There's a mirror there, and a werewolf guy there. Used to have a head, but doesn't anymore. But like you say, some can be amazing. Some can be right hidden gems. I've ridden on the it's called the Geisterschloss in it's a traveling one in Germany, and that's phenomenal. You know, these.
Yeah, they're definitely up in their game now, and I know a lot of showmen that run these haunted houses really do. They're starting to put a lot of care into what's actually inside, and they're taking some pride in it.
Absolutely. And I suppose with you, I mean, forgive me for my ignorance, but it's basically like you know, you see it all packed up. It's like a flat pack ride, really, isn't it? And then you create it. Is that why maybe you've sort of gone for the style of event that Dr. Frights is? I mean, if anyone's listening who hasn't been able to visit before, it's very unique for the UK in the fact that you guys just have an open field. You get people to build the marquees, and then you build, in essence, sort of flat pack attractions. You build them all up, you create them all. I suppose because you've worked with funfairs your whole life, is that why that sort of event's become a second nature to you?
That's why I wanted to bring that up, actually, because that is it. That's exactly it. We're used to
of course,
going to an empty field and building something, whether it be a funfair, and then in turn turning into Dr. Frights. It's exactly the same thing. You go there, it's a completely empty field. We have like a 3 or 4 week build. We build it all up, we open, and then we take it all down. And a week later, it's back to being an empty field. And I think it'd be very hard for you to try to prepare for that if I hadn't been doing it for my whole life in some way or another, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, some people, you know, people spend months and months building these things. And like you say, to go from an empty field to create what you do. And and I, you know, lots of listeners to the podcast, they've visited Dr. Frights. It's nothing done by halves. It's a proper, you know, key event, and there's lots of theming. There's lots of, you know, there's tech, there's sound, there's you know, you have to think about, you know, hiring the toilets, the food, the absolutely everything.
I wouldn't always say we've got that right. You know, we've been doing it for 10 years. We've done plenty wrong in those 10 years. It's just been a learning process. And when, like, going back to then, when we was doing the traveling fun fair, we was doing that for a while, but it wasn't viable anymore.
Right. Okay.
It just got too expensive to do for us. And then from then, we was thinking of things to do. I love horror. I loved running the fun fair haunted house. Mm-hmm. And then there was these guys, Eddie and James, who own the White's Nurseries, where we set up the event. They have a farm shop, and we always used to get our apples to make toffee apples from them. Okay. So we've always had a relationship with those, and we knew that they had this field on there. And I was speaking to my brother, and we just thought, let's go ahead, let's do it, let's try it. And we got in contact with them, where they was more than up for it. And that's how it started. You know, we didn't have much of a clue of what we was doing back then. We just knew that we wanted to do it. Yeah. And there's three things that actually prepared us for that, I think. The first one being, do you remember at ScareCon? I'm not sure of the year, but it was the Magic Circle year.
That was a year before I attended. My first one was Blackpool, Norbert Castle, mine was. So that was a year or two before. I think it was 2010, that one.
Yeah. So, well, I'm not sure exactly, but I remember it being there, and I remember they had Linton V. Harris. Do you remember?
He created the freezer and things like that.
Yeah, he did a fantastic talk there, where he was basically saying that you don't have to have the best props, you don't have to have the best actors, you just need to give people an experience that they'll remember. And whether that experience is just being in the dark, where they're scared with not much lot else happening, then that's fine. As long as they go away and they felt scared and they enjoyed themselves, and you didn't aim too high and do too much that you couldn't deliver, then you'll be okay. That was the first thing that made me think, maybe this is worth having a go at. And then ScareCon at the NEC, Stuart Beer from Tully's, did another fantastic talk, where he actually gave out these like pamphlet kind of things, where he laid out the entire history of Tully's, down from what mazes they had each year to their attendance each year, and having all that in black and white and seeing how it grown was a big inspiration.
Of course.
And then lastly, there was one more thing where we, you know, Frightmare Over Farm.
Oh yeah, Over Farm. Yeah.
We actually took our Funfair Haunted House there to open with their Frightmare event. And Kevin and Wayne, brilliant, really accommodating. And it was great to see firsthand how an event actually operates like that.
Of course, yeah.
And those were the three things that just pushed us to think, bugger it, let's just go and do it. We've got the land, we've got the passion, and now we've got the inspiration.
Absolutely. And you got a bit of the knowledge there as well, which is what ScareCon comes, you know, so in handy with, especially in your early years back then. So you know, we're talking about year one. Was it a case of you just had one or two attractions? How did year one sort of start? And then over the years, I know you went indoors 4 or 5 years ago, so that obviously changed the dynamics of the event. How would you say that the event has changed from that first year?
Well, anybody that didn't attend in our first year, and there wasn't many people, I bought some gazebos, garden gazebos off of eBay.
Right, okay.
And that's what it was all set inside. You know, I had this mindset, obviously, like I was just saying, that I'm not going to go, we can't go for the big budget, we can't do the big props and stuff, but if I can just get people into a maze and make it dark and have good music, then they're going to be scared, and hopefully if the ticket price is right, they'll come away and they'll be happy with it. So we had these garden gazebos. The next thing to figure out was, how do we make the walk of the maze? Mm-hmm. How do we do that in, I think back then we had 2 weeks to build it.
Wow.
So we can't really do plywood panels and stuff like that. And then I was just thinking, like, Harris fencing slots in, it all connects together, it's strong. So that's how we come up with that. The thing is with it, you can only do it in 12-foot panels.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a master at that now.
Yeah, second nature then, now.
Yeah. Back then, that was another obstacle to figure out. But we had these aerosfence panels inside the garden gazebos. And we just did as much beaming as we could within that time. Mm-hmm. And we had the asylum, which... Nice. We wouldn't do now, obviously.
How times have changed, eh?
Yeah, and that was just a rip-off of Four Parks Asylum, to be honest with you, but yeah. I love that maze.
Quality,
so
yeah.
We had that. We had the Harris Fence panels with the strobe lighting, and that was pretty much the extent of it. And then we had the darkness, which was another little maze where we thought we can't afford a load of lighting and stuff at this time. We can't afford the layout for that, so how can we get people around this maze? And we went to Poundland and bought a load of crappy torches. We said we'd give them all a torch, and then we haven't got to do none of the lighting. They're in the darkness. If the music's right, then it should be a cool maze. And it was, actually, you know. The funny thing was, afterwards people were saying, wow, those torches are really high tech, they cut off just at the right times.
And you're like, yeah, we designed them that way. Yeah, thanks, Poundland.
Exactly, yeah, I take credit for it.
Yeah.
But really, it was because they're just rubbish.
It's amazing what accidents can turn out to be amazing.
That's it, yeah, we've been lucky in that regard. So on there, obviously, we've just grown each year. Like I said, we've got plenty of stuff wrong. We've learned along the way a lot. And after doing, I think, 4 years inside those gazebos, then we had enough of a following. We had enough of confidence to lay out for the proper event marquees. Yeah. And that really changed the game then.
Right.
Then we had this big open space inside that we could work with. We had more freedom with the way we could lay out our mazes and the walkthrough. So that again, we started sort of from scratch with that, and we've been learning as we go. But yeah. we haven't really turned back since we've had this event marquee. It made a lot of difference.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've been visiting since, I want to say it was 2013 with Bad Trip. Was that's a standout?
2013, yeah.
Yeah, that was the first time I visited with you, and you had an asylum attraction then, obviously a carnival attraction, and also like an exorcism attraction as well.
The exorcism, yeah, I remember that most fondly,
Which I remember going through with Sarah Clellan from Scare Tour, who, she was crying throughout the whole thing, bless her.
Yeah. She's got a phobia, hasn't she?
She's got a phobia of that sort of stuff.
The exorcism, possession sort of stuff, because every time she goes through one of our mazes that's got it in, she always gives me daggers afterwards.
but it's been great to see. I mean, I was blown away by the attraction, you know, back then, a good 6 or 7 years ago, purely because it is something very different to, and don't get me wrong, I love loads of attractions that we visit, whether it be Tully's or, you know, a farm park event, or whether it be Orton Towers, a theme park event. But, you know, this, your event is a slightly more, it's organic, you know, it's real, because like you say, 3 weeks earlier, it was a field. And then it's just turned into, you know, I mean, going the last few years, and it's really is a monster of an event now. It reminds me of like a festival, but for scare mazes. So instead of a film festival, instead of Download Rock Festival, it's a festival, but instead of seeing bands, you're going to see attractions.
That's nice. Yeah, that's what we was going for. So it's good that comes across.
Yeah, 100%. Hannah's got to the point now that every single time she hears Rob Zombie, she goes, "Oh, Dr. Frights." I was thinking of Dr. Frights.
The music is one of the most important things in a scare attraction. I really do believe that.
Yeah.
I mean, going back to, once again, when I was in that Funfair Haunted House, I'd be in there for like 10 hours sometimes, open. Mm. And on the side of my counter, I'd have little security cameras that would show me a feed from inside.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's not a lot of stuff inside. There's just static props, like maybe a Texas Chainsaw guy, Leatherface, and a Hannibal Lecter. But I had a good sound system in there. And I had a little laminated printout of 32 tracks, which was on the CD. Okay. Mm-hmm. 32 like Halloween sound effects. You'd have like scary breathing, you'd have a scream, And what I'll do is I'll just look at the monitors, watch people as they go through. And eventually I had it so if I press the right track at the right time, even though there's no actors in there, no animatronics, just by sound, I could get people to run out of the exit like nine times out of ten. Just by when I knew when they would go up to this certain cage that a light was going to come on and it was going to reveal the Leatherface static prop. Yep. I would make the chainsaw sound really loud, yeah? And then they'd run away from that. I think it just freaked people out. They thought, how are all these sounds going in this crappy funfair one? but that really drilled home to me like how important the sound is in a scare maze. I think if you can get someone in a dark room and just have sound playing, you can freak them out a lot more than whether you've just got it completely lit and they can see everything, you know?
Absolutely. It's the fear of the unknown, isn't it? Especially when it's so dark and, like you say, sound. You know, it's same with movies. If you're watching something and you hear a heartbeat getting louder and louder, again, without the sound, it's just a shot of... you know, a killer that's, you know, scary, it's there, but you can see it. But the fact that the heartbeat's getting louder or the scratching on the door's getting more intense, like you say, the sound really is something that that brings that extra element to any sort of art form as well, but especially when it comes to horror mazes and the sort
Definitely,
of genre.
Yeah. Your imagination can do it a lot worse than actual physical things in front of you. Did you ever do... the seance, I think it was Hide and Shriek at Southend.
I didn't get a chance, no, unfortunately.
Fantastic sound design on that.
Because it was all in pitch blackness near enough, wasn't it?
Near enough, you sat around a table and so well choreographed. And just the use of sound, the lights would drop and the sound would just, it freaked me out, honestly. It was a fantastic little attraction. Brilliant.
Yeah, I heard so many good things about that. It's just so far away from me. Well, it was so far away from me. That's the problem. We think that England's small, but surprisingly, it takes a long time to get to some of the events, and there's so many events to get to as well. Now, is that something that you've seen as well? Obviously, you've been doing this for 10 years. Have you seen that you've got, I suppose, you know, you're where you're based, there's not a lot of attractions in this sort of genre close to you, but... I suppose Extreme Scream isn't too far away from you, or
yeah, we've got Extreme Scream at Mountain Mowbray, we've got Hinchinbrook,
of course,
that way, and then we've got Tully's the Howl, or is it just the Howl?
Course.
I think it's just the Howl.
The Howl.
But yeah, fantastic events, really, really brilliant events, great for the Midlands scare
Absolutely.
Industry.
And do you think that's only, I mean, some people can be quite old-fashioned about using the term competition lightly, but people are like, oh, one's set up an hour away, so we're going to get half the people in this year or things like that. Or would you say that it's actually benefited you guys because it's just helped the whole industry, you know,
it's benefited
boom?
Us.
It's helped more.
Us without a doubt.
Yeah, perfect.
Without a doubt. And not just in that respect, that it's building like awareness of the scare mazes and stuff. Some people can go to Extreme Scream, have a fantastic time, and they think, oh, I want to do that somewhere else. Come to us, or go to Hinchinbrook, or go to the Howl.
Absolutely.
And it's not just that, but it's also, they make us a better event. We see Extreme Scream do fantastic stuff, and we're like, oh, we've got to up our game now, guys, you know.
Yeah, well, healthy competition's great, yeah.
And Hinchinbrook had a great year this year, so I've heard. I didn't get to go there myself. But we love to hear it, you know. It's really good.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's similar with me. I mean, I went into one scare maze thinking I was going to hate it, ended up thinking it was the best thing since sliced bread, and now... you can't keep me away from them, you know, doing
That's
as
it,
much
yeah.
as you can.
Yeah, so, and it takes one. And hopefully we do the same for them, you know. Maybe people will come out and try Dr. Frights, really enjoy it, and then go off to one of those guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. And that's what's great about, I think, the UK haunt industry and the fact that everyone's so friendly with each other and everyone's quite sharing, especially when it comes to ScareCon and things like that. So it's good to see that, obviously, you guys have been around for 10 years. It'll be 11 years this October, all being well. And it's crazy to see how much more have popped up since since you guys started way back when as well, and how events change, how things change, and you know, I've seen your sets year on year just seem to get better and better and better. I remember one year, I think, I don't know if you're nominated for a scene, or when you went through and a big bus came at you. You know, all the tech that
Nightmare
goes into
on Main
it. Well.
Street,
that was it. That was such a quality attraction. And again, for any listeners that didn't go through that, I know a couple of your mazes have sort of followed this design as well, which it splits a few people, but I love it. You can actually kind of see the whole attraction in front of you. It's similar to, I think it was your Grindhouse maze this year just gone.
Yeah.
And it's a very, very different design to anything else I feel that I've done, because you know, most mazes you'll go into this room, then you go into the next room, then you go into the next room, but those sort of designed attractions that you guys have created in the recent years, it you feel that you can see everything, and you kind of can, but then you go into a room and then you go into another room, then you go back into that room again later on, and you're thinking, how did I get hit? Is that sort of a logistical nightmare, or is it quite fun to be able to create that different style of attraction?
It's actually easier.
Right,
it's easier.
Okay.
Because we have a lot more of a bigger open space to work with. Like I said, we use the Harrison's Palace to build our mazes. So it's actually harder in the tighter mazes that's really right. Tight corridors, because you've got to work out the logistics of having a 12-foot panel and them all fitting in. When you've got the big open space and you can just build up each side and you've got a nice big centre arena area, it's easier in a design way. Maybe it's harder for the actors, though, and the actors really do a good job in those sort of environments too, because they can be seen all the way through. It's not like you go into their room and they're out and they can have a breather. They've got to be in that character all night, because you know, people can see them from the other side of the maze sometimes, you know?
So
that's the difficulty with those sort of layouts. But we always like to have one like that, because like you said, it's not for everybody. Some people don't like it.
That's
fine. We got three others.
Exactly. It's diversity.
That's it.
And it's something that you guys do sort of is the diversity of attractions as well. I mean, I was just looking at your last year's advertisement, which I want to get onto the advertisement later, because I think they're some of the best I've ever seen. But they're so good. But before we get onto those, and like obviously the advertising side of it and the social media side, you do have a very, very different style of attractions that, you know, each group's going to come away with a different style of favourite. So whether it is the bonkers sort of clown mazes, or whether it's the more sinister, darker, the woods style attractions, or whether it's people love horror movies and they're Hollywood horror, I think last year was the most scared I've ever been in my entire life. Jeez, those mazes every year, and then last year with Director's Cut, I was like, bloody hell. Is that something that you guys as well want to be conscious of, the fact that you're getting lots of different types of people, you're getting nice big groups of people and things like that? You know, it's good to not have just one type of maze. It's good to have different style of attractions and different themes.
Definitely. We used to, back when we first started, there was always one favourite, and it'd usually be like the Asylum Strobe maze kind of maze.
Yeah.
So on the reviews and stuff, people say, oh, that maze was amazing, that was the best. And we didn't really hear much about the other mazes. Mm-hmm. Now we've got people saying, like last year, for instance, there's something in the woods was the best.
Right.
And then someone would comment on that and say, that was rubbish, actually. Redneck Redemption was the best. And then someone would say, what you want about? Hollywood Horror was the best. And that's what we want, you know. That then you've got a good, varied level of quality throughout all of your mazes then, you know. I think it's worrying when you've got just people constantly saying that just one maze was the best. That's not really what we're going for. And we have seemed to be able to get that balance right in the last few years.
Definitely. So I touched on it briefly a moment ago as well, though. And if anyone who's listening to this podcast who hasn't seen advertisement videos for Dr. Frights, go onto their Facebook page now. There's a link in the show notes. Is that it's a very American style, isn't it? But rather than it looking like a terrifying, like I've seen the likes of Orton Towers, showing their Scarefest offering, and in fairness, they only very rarely do a video trailer. But I've seen Tully's of Up the Game with video trailers and Farmageddon, and it's all really quality stuff. But it is very focused on the horror, scary, spooky side of things, which makes sense for this kind of business. But you guys go very American, cheesy, funny, outlandish, yeah. And it really, really works because it makes people, in my eyes anyway, if I was a consumer, it'd make me want to go, boom, buying that ticket. Is that, again, where have you guys sort of got your, where's the thought process within these sort of online videos when it, rather than going scary, going down the more American fun popcorn hot dog
style? I think it's
style.
Just trying to get across what we want people to experience when they come to Dr. Frights. To be honest, I couldn't give a crap if we scared every single person. That's not my priority. Mm-hmm. My priority is to have them come to the event, have a laugh with their mates, and go home at a good time.
Yeah,
a fun time.
Yeah.
Sure, we'll always have one maze that is more focused on just the raw scares for the people that want that. But it's really not. Our priority is just to entertain people, you know.
Absolutely.
And that comes across in the trailers as well.
Yeah, definitely.
So I think that I mean, you know how people are when they go through scare attractions. They're pushing each other in front. They're having a laugh. They're laughing at each other. Yeah. And that's where the memories come in, I think.
Absolutely.
More than just saying, oh, it's absolutely terrified. I didn't like it. No, they say, oh, did you see Jeanette? Cowering in the corner, and they'll just tease her about that for years to come, you know.
Absolutely, definitely. And you know, talking about seeing Jeanette cowering in a corner, or you know, me being jumped out of my wits by a character or whatnot, the good thing is that it's not just the groups of friends that get to see that, it's also everyone who's in the Horror Town bar. Right, which is great, you know.
Yeah, we are cruel like that.
it's such a good idea, you know. And you know, speaking of the bar as well, it's always great to have a bar and event. But what you guys do, which I think is a great sort of concept and a great way of using it, is people can go into the bar once they've done the four mazes, and then they can sort of relax, have a couple of beers. Then has that always been the formula that you guys have worked with, or has that changed over the years?
No, it's always been the way,
and it works.
It does work. Yeah, I mean, we don't want people. For one thing, we're only open like 3 hours a night, from 7 till 10. So we don't want people coming in at 8 o'clock and spending an hour and a half in the bar before they get into the maze. They would never get through everything,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
But the main reason is that we just don't want people going in there getting getting tipsy and then misbehaving in the mazes.
Of course, absolutely.
So they go through, they do all the mazes, and then they can enjoy themselves in the bar.
Definitely, and it works really well. We did an episode, it's probably a year ago now, regarding alcohol at scare events, and you know, some events are completely dry, and then other events who used to be dry, like, you know, Screamfest in Burton used to be, they've now created a bar where it's in a designated area. I know Tullers have done the same and whatnot. And this system, like you say, because you are you're open for that 3 hours, it makes sense, it works. And it's not, what I like about your guys' bar as well is that it doesn't seem like an afterthought. It's very well themed, it's heavily themed, and you got, like you say, the video screens as well, where people can see people getting scared within the mazes. Is that something that each year you've already got a thought of where you're going to put these hidden cameras, or do you sort of see them in operation and go, right, that's a place for a good scare, let's put a camera in there?
No, it's when we have everything built. So it's really the last, one of the last jobs we do actually before we open is I'll go around and sort all the cameras out for the bar, because then, I mean, it's fine looking at the plans and stuff like that, but say for the ghost face room in Hollywood Horror, for instance, on my plan it's just a load of little guys sat on seats.
Yeah,
you can't get a good feel for that. But once we actually built it and we looked at it and we thought, well, this would be a fantastic place to put a scare cam. So yeah, it's one of the last things we do. We go around all of the scenes and we just see where we think would be best to do that.
Perfect. And yeah, it's always good to, like I said, me and Hannah, as anyone knows, listen to this. Hannah's the drinker of the group. She always enjoys going into the bar after getting a few frights of Dr. Frights. You mentioned that that's one of the last things when it comes to the sort of the design process. Once you've designed it all, you've put it all in, you then put in your cameras. This is gonna. It's a bit of a bittersweet at the minute, because I'm guessing now is the time that you would be heavily planning for 2020.
Yeah. So usually, what we'll do is, as soon as the event finishes, we will sit down and come up with some baseline ideas in November of what worked and what didn't work that year. And then we'd have a bit of a Christmas break, and as soon as January comes around, we'll start getting those ideas into place and prepare for the next year. And we was doing that by March, and then obviously
the whole world goes mad.
So it's all come to a standstill at the moment. But hopefully, we still get to do some sort of event this year. But you know, if we don't, we've got our health, and that's what's most
absolutely
important.
Yeah, the health and safety, people being safe and well is the main thing. And then obviously it all depends how it goes, doesn't it? I mean, by October we might be looking at this in our rear view mirror going, crikey, that ended abruptly or faster than we thought, and great, let's that would be nice. But then it could be a case of, we can open, but are we still heavily social distancing? How can an event really run with social distancing?
The problem that we've got is that we haven't been able to now put the planning in place that we should have been doing this sort of time.
Right.
So even if it comes to September, everything can go ahead, which is doubtful. But if it can, we're so behind the curve. We should have had so much done by then, you know.
Yeah.
So even if we can go ahead with something, it might just have to be a stripped down version of the event that's cheaper to get into, and but it still delivers just something for the guests, you know.
Of course, absolutely.
But we'll see. I mean, we've got to go through that and see how it goes. But the most important thing is just to make sure everybody stays healthy, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the main thing. That's the best thing to take away from this, really. Is and if you know, if the worst comes and we can't do it this year, I'm sure you'll be back as good as ever next year.
We're not going anywhere. Yes. I don't know what I'd do with myself. Dr. Frights, you know.
awesome. I think that's. I mean, I don't like to end things on a downer as such, but obviously you have to sort of discuss the elephant in the room, unfortunately. But it's been great chatting about the last 10 years of Dr. Frights. 4 Scar Awards under your belt in that time as well. And you know, if we just put a big X next to this year and see what the hell happens, I wish you the best of luck moving forwards, and thank you so much for coming on to a Scare Track.
Thank you very much. And can I just say again what I sort of said when I accepted the award from Michael the other night, and you know, all the other events out there, if anybody's listening to this, just hang in there, you know. You're all doing a fantastic job, and if we can't get open this year, then just concentrate on next year and just take a breath and hang in there and deliver a fantastic event. And also, just another little thing, because I mean, I owe a lot to Lynn VR, Stuart Beer, Wayne and Kevin from Frightmare to get me started. So I'd just like to say, if anybody's thinking of starting a scare event, go for it, you know. As long as you're doing it within your parameters, you're not going into a load of debt doing it, and you can only do what you can do, give it a go. Just give it a go. See where it ends up.
Definitely.
Because in 10 years' time, you might win best scare maze.
Yeah, man, absolutely. Definitely. Yeah, so anyone listening, if you've got a dream and you can do it smartly, safely, then yeah, go ahead and do it, man.
Can I just say also one last thing? I just want to give a shout out to all our wonderful team of actors, makeup artists, stewards, everybody that just helps the event be what it is, you know. Without our fantastic team of actors, some of which have been there since the very start 10 years ago, we wouldn't be nowhere near as good as we are now. So thanks, guys.
Joe, awesome, wise words. Great event. Congratulations again on your latest win. And fingers crossed, we'll be seeing you in October.
Yes, I hope so. Thanks very much. I really enjoyed this. Thank you.
Cheers, buddy. Thanks a lot, pal. Bye-bye.
See ya. Bye.
You're listening to Scare Trap.
And there we go, folks. First of all, a huge thank you to Joe for coming on to the Scare Trap podcast. We sincerely do appreciate it. We always love going to Dr. Fright's Halloween nights, and we really enjoy catching up with the whole team. Joe, his brother, his whole family, friends, the actors, the whole place of Dr. Fright's Halloween nights, they all really do wear their heart on their sleeve. It's there's so much blood, sweat, tears, passion that really does go into that event. I'm not saying that it doesn't every event around the UK and Europe and the world, but there's something about Halloween nights that really does have that that homegrown feel, and I'm always proud to say that we've got something like that in the UK. I really don't think there's anything else like it here, and it really, really does give us a fantastic fright and lots of laughs each and every year. So thank you to Joe, and thank you to your whole family, friends, actors, absolutely everyone. Speaking of the actors, guys, you really, really do make our visits really, really exciting, as you do every customer that walks through your doors. You're very interactive with us over on our social media as well, which we sincerely do appreciate. It makes what we do that much more worthwhile and much more fun, and we love getting your scary selfies. We love interacting with you, and we really, really do appreciate it. And fingers crossed for Joe, for the whole family, for friends, all the actors. Fingers crossed this October goes ahead. We can only hope. If not, we'll be seeing you in 2021, bigger and better than ever, I am sure. Guys, before you go anywhere listening to this episode of the podcast, thank you so, so much for listening. But be sure to go and follow Dr. Fright's over on their social media pages. I've linked them below. Obviously, we are in the off-season now, so they're slightly quieter. But go back through the years and just check out the advertisements I was talking about in the interview there with Joe. Their adverts for each year I just think are great. They're really cheesy American fun off the wall kind of adverts, and they tick a big box for me. So go over and check that out. Obviously, if the event goes ahead, fingers crossed it does this year, you can get your tickets at drfrights.com. That's drfrights.com. Again, we'll put a link in our show notes below. Fingers crossed that this October goes ahead, guys. We've said it on every episode. It's the elephant in the room. We're trying to keep positive here on Scare Track and talk about this lovely, fantastic, amazing, insane industry that we all know and love. Let's just hope that, you know, we save Halloween this year, fingers crossed. But I think that brings us to the perfect end of this episode. Like I said right at the beginning, if you're not joined us on social media yet, make sure you do. Go to Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat and Twitter. Just search for Scare Track. Give us a like. It really, really does help us out. We've had recently a few more things go up on our YouTube channel. You can check out our YouTube channel, youtube.com/ScareTrack. Again, if you can click that subscribe button, that really, really does help us out. We watched a 3-hour live ghost hunt from Shrewsbury Prison last week, and we edited that into 10 minutes of madness, which was really fun. Multiple camera angles, some crazy slow-mo shots of Hannah screaming down my ear, and make sure you go and check that out, because we really enjoyed it and we hope you do too. Guys, that brings us to the end of this episode of Scare Track. Once again, a huge thank you for listening. Thank you to Joe for coming on, and we'll see you guys soon.